Hello and welcome to this new edition of Viewpoints. Boris Chassaigne here with you for the next half hour. On today's show, transportation advocates say passenger rail service in the Maritimes is doomed if no investments are made.
It's not just about kind of the urgent need to make sure that we don't lose those trains, but it's also an opportunity to actually bring the rest of the country's rail services up to what we'd kind of expect from a more modern service.
Prince Edward County subsidizes a popular ride-sharing company, 5,300 rides completed in 2022. In Quebec, Loisirs Sport Outaouais offers free skis and snowshoes to sports enthusiasts.
It's a project to make physical activities, sports and recreation more accessible.
In BC, Paige Pierce, age 21, is appointed to the position of Youth Poet Laureate by the Nanaimo City Council.
There are lots of things that remind me of my nan. I mean, I'm wearing her sweatshirt as we do this interview and everything, so I try to summon her spirit and her essence in everything that I do. And even though I make pasta weird, it's what my nan would have done, so I hope that she would have been proud.
And after a clampdown on homeless camps, the Edmonton City Council declares housing and houselessness emergency.
The demand for housing is considerably exceeding our current capacity. The system is in stress.
And in Quebec, new rent increase guidelines worry Quebec's tenants groups. Welcome to Viewpoints, local news nationwide.
Follow us on X at CanadaLJI and listen to all our stories on frequencynews.ca.
Thanks for keeping us company again this week. The Transport Action Group, a public transportation advocacy organization, is calling for Canadians to support a parliamentary petition calling for the preservation and growth of passenger rail service in Canada. The group says that the future of passenger rail service in the Maritimes and anywhere outside of the Windsor, Ontario to Quebec City corridor is doomed without key federal government action and investments. The president of Transport Action Atlantic, Tim Heyman, is calling on the federal government for immediate action to refurbish Via Rail's fleet and to stop plans to privatize the most profitable parts of its operations. More with Erica Butler in Sackville, New Brunswick.
Yeah, my name is Tim Heyman. I am currently the president of Transport Action Atlantic. We're a nonprofit volunteer advocacy organization in Atlantic Canada that's advocating for improvements in intercity public transportation kind of throughout the region.
Tim Heyman says that the current trains being used to run the ocean are at the end of their useful life and may not be viable much past 2030. That's why Transport Action's petition is calling on the federal government to renew Via Rail's long-distance fleet. Heyman says Via is ready to go with the long process to procure new trains, but needs substantial funding from the federal government to do so. If it doesn't come soon, Via Rail could be facing a situation where more services need to shut down due to a lack of viable equipment.
The alternative to all of that, if we don't actually go ahead with this procurement, is potentially the end of all passenger rail service outside of the Quebec City-Windsor corridor, which that's obviously a situation we don't want to find ourselves in. But the flip side of that as well is that it's not just about kind of the urgent need to make sure that we don't lose those trains, but it's also an opportunity to actually bring the rest of the country's rail services up to what we'd kind of expect from a more modern service.
Another facet of the Transport Action petition is a call for the government to give passenger rail and Via Rail itself some legal standing, much like its counterpart in the U.S., Amtrak. Via is a crown corporation but has no rights over any of the rail network it uses to transport passengers in Canada.
It's resulted in Via having little control over kind of the performance of their network, but also the frequencies they can run and the schedules they can maintain and all that. And it's had a really detrimental effect across the countries.
Heyman says the plight of passenger trains is particularly notable in New Brunswick, where CN has not maintained tracks to passenger rail standards, which has in turn added hours to the ocean's travel time.
Particularly between Miramichi and Bathurst, up in that area where the schedule today is considerably longer, I mean, several hours longer than it was not that many years ago. And you ride the train up there and you notice it very, very acutely because the train just crawls along. And a lot of that is on sections of track that are dead straight. And there really is no kind of fundamental engineering reason why you can't have faster trains there. It's just that CN hasn't prioritized. They run very little freight traffic over that line. So there's been no incentive to maintain that and actually keep that up to the standards that they need to facilitate passenger speeds.
Heyman says that by giving Via Rail some legal rights over the rail rights of way in Canada, the Crown Corporation would be in a better position to negotiate access, similar to its U.S. counterpart.
A lot of this is trying really to mirror what exists already in the United States. Because obviously Amtrak, that operates passenger rail services there, is very similar to Via in a lot of ways. I mean, they were set up, I guess, a little bit different statutorily there, but they're set up basically as a way to take over when freight railways were getting out of the passenger business. They were set up to take that over and run the national network. And they have always had that kind of that actual standing where there are requirements for freight railways to maintain certain standards as it relates to prioritization and on-time performance and all that. And Amtrak can actually take those railways to court, and they do routinely.
In the Windsor to Quebec corridor, Via has for years now been working on a plan to run its own high-frequency rail corridor, separate from the current freight system. But that plan also features into the Transport Action Petition. The group is asking the federal government to stop plans for privatizing the new high-frequency corridor, which it says would essentially gut Via's core services, handing over the most profitable piece of passenger service in Canada to a private company. Heyman says even though that point seems focused on Central Canada, it has direct impact on Maritimers.
The pitch for supporting that was that this is something that would ultimately, as it, you know, by improving Via's core operations, it would put them into a situation where, in theory, this could end up being a profitable operation, and it would effectively kind of cross-subsidize the rest of the network. So it would free up funds for Via to actually invest in services in the Atlantic, services at West and the North, et cetera. And when you suddenly propose carving all of this off so it becomes a private entity, so any benefits that are coming from that are going back to the private operator, then you have the rest of Via's network effectively orphaned and kind of, you know, cut off from that. I think once you start going down that road and into the realm of privatizing services and kind of separating things off like that, I think it's very reasonable to worry about the long-term future of any services outside of the corridors.
Heyman says that despite the belief by many that Canada is just not suited to rail, the geography and demographics here are similar to other places with far superior public passenger service. It's been 34 years since the federal government made major cuts, nearly halving Via Rail service. And in the Maritimes, the service has continued to dwindle. But Heyman says it's largely a matter of investment.
The reason that we have fewer Via trains running across the country right now is because federal governments at various times decided to stop running them, stop paying for them and stop running them. That's why they stopped running. They didn't stop because people en masse stopped using them. You can look at a lot of the trains in this region that, you know, in their final years of operation, like, were still well patronized. Obviously, you had shifts, you know, with better highways, better roads and everything else. And, you know, maybe more people using that, but there wasn't, you know, it's not like there was suddenly this just kind of mass exodus that everybody left the train, so they had to go.
That's Tim Heyman, president of Transport Action Atlantic. The Transport Action Petition to the federal government will remain active until April.
That was Erica Butler.
You are listening to Viewpoints.
Picton, Ontario now, where the Prince Edward County Council decided to subsidize again this year a ride-sharing company called U-Ride. The original motion to renew the $30,000 subsidy was first denied by the council at the November meeting. However, city councillors reconsidered their decision. The subsidy supplements the income of the drivers and is funded through the municipal accommodation tax, which is financed through tourism. U-Ride became available in the county in 2022 with some 5,300 rides completed so far. Details with Brenda Little in Picton, Ontario.
U-Ride is a Canadian ride-sharing company which was founded in Thunder Bay in 2017 with the goal of preventing impaired driving. Founder and CAO Cody Roberto, originally a professional soccer player, saw the need for safe, reliable, reasonably priced transportation in his hometown, so started the company with one car. The company now serves 20 cities in four provinces. Regional Operations Manager Vince Scott gave a deputation to council outlining the history of the company as well as the challenges Prince Edward County presents. The company operates their fleets in small to mid-sized cities, so the county, with its expansive geography and low population density, did not fit their usual criteria. E-Ride has been operating in Belleville for some time, and noting the strong tourist industry in the county, they saw an opportunity to provide transportation where there were gaps. According to Stats Canada, impaired driving rates is 2.5 times higher in rural areas than urban areas, and Prince Edward County impaired incidents are on the rise. E-Ride became available in the county in 2022, with 5,300 rides completed, a growth of 68% year over year, and has a 5-star rating with 99% of its customers. Tourists are the main customer base, but the service is quickly catching on to residents all over the county. Councillors were concerned about the taxi industry in Peck, noting that there are 2 companies, down from 3, operating, and the question was why subsidize one and not the other. Rick Marshall, owner of Taxi Guide, told the Picton Gazette that he was unaware of any micro-grant programs or potential revisions to the taxi bylaw. When all was said and done, council increased the proposed $30,000 subsidy to $40,000 and voted to revise the taxi bylaw. For the Local Journalism Initiative, I'm Brenda Little.
You're on the air with Viewpoints.
Outdoor sports enthusiasts are all smiles since the Pontiac Quebec Regional Sports and Recreation Body, Loisirs Sports Outaouais, decided to offer sporting equipment sharing across the region with locations in the Pontiac as well. Project Circumflex offers equipment like cross-country skis and snowshoes to the general public free of charge. Project Circumflex is looking to expand to other regions such as Outer Lake. It has also partnered with Le Patron in Mansfield, which offers ski trails in the winter, as well as canoes and kayaks in the summer months. Caleb Nickerson.
All right, so I'm joined here on the line by Sylviana Joffrey, a development agent with Loisirs Sports Outaouais, to talk a little bit about Project Circumflex, a project they have coming up here. Sylviana, how's it going?
Good, how are you?
Oh, not so bad. So can you explain, what exactly is Project Circumflex?
It is a provincial project, actually, that we're deploying at a regional level. It's a project to make physical activities, sports, and recreation more accessible, and to increase and promote the regular practice of physical activity. And how? It's through creating loan centers and so that equipment can be made available for free for all citizens, all ages, all across Quebec.
And is this a new project? How long has it been going on here?
It was launched this last September, and we've been working on it since the summer, May. I've been going to the different MRCs. We've chosen to deploy it locally per MRC to chat with the organizations that already rent equipment or municipalities that would be interested in offering the rental service, I mean the loan service. And especially in the Pontiac, we've been discussing with the Patro in Fort Coulanges, Mansfield, and with the Maison des Jeunes du Pontiac, and equally with at the Carrefour Jeunesse Emploi, actually. You're all invited. This Wednesday, we're launching a center that's going to be just beside the Carrefour, the building, where we're going to be lending cross-country skis and snowshoes every Saturday. So it's right downtown in the village. The idea is to offer like a urban outdoor experience that people can access by foot or, that it's right there.
And so how does that the borrowing process work? Do you have to sign up somewhere? And what's the equipment just stored in some kind of shed or something along those lines?
Yes, it's a shed actually where all the equipment is stored. People just can come. They don't need to sign up. They'll just have to give a piece of ID to leave while they use the equipment, and that's it. They have to bring it back before 4 p.m.
And so it's just cross-country ski equipment here for the winter?
Yes, and snowshoeing. Now we have the Patrol. They have really nice ski trails. They're going to be landing in the summertime as well. Their canoes, kayak, rabaska, bikes. So the idea is that all throughout the year, there's going to be sites where the equipment is made available. And we've developed in the other MRCs partnerships with similar organizations like in Papineau and in the Merci des Collines as well. We still have two more years, so I invite people to contact me. All my information is on the website of Loisirsport Outaouais, and they can, so that if they're interested in managing a center or just being users, have more information about the project, don't hesitate.
To Viewpoints with Boris Sasang.
Paige Pierce is Nanaimo's new Youth Poet Laureate. She is now looking forward to helping young people develop their poetry skills and contribute to a growing poetry community in the city. Pierce, age 21, was just appointed to the position by the Nanaimo City Council for a two-year term. She is an education student at Vancouver Island University and working towards being a high school teacher. Pierce says she plans to facilitate poetry workshops for youth in the city, host poetry cafes and poetry slams. Mick Sweetman in Nanaimo, British Columbia, met up with her.
Can you just tell me a bit about how you got started in poetry?
For sure. So I was always a big reader. I sort of inherited that trait from my mother, who's also a huge bookworm. And I took a bunch of writing classes in high school. So I totally attribute all of my poetry abilities and all of that to a class that I took from grades 9 to 12. It was a creative writing class. And I just really loved it. We didn't do a ton of poetry exploration, but I had other friends in that class that were really into it. So I picked up a few books from the bookstore and I really found myself drawn to it. And you know how being a teenager is, especially a young teenager. So I thought that it was a really good escape method and coping mechanism for sort of the trials and tribulations of being a 14, 15, 16-year-old girl living in the modern world. So I really read a lot of poetry before I started writing it. And then I started with really terrible prose that I would post on these little writer blogs on the internet. And slowly I started finding my voice a little bit. I found a couple of books that I really liked the structure and style of, and I started to imitate those a little bit with my own writing until I landed where I am now. So yeah, that's how I got into it.
What does a youth poet laureate do?
I'd love to develop some youth poetry programming in the city of Nanaimo, specifically in the summertime when everybody's schedules open up a little bit. So that basically could look like doing some poetry workshops that are led by me or facilitated by me, because I'm obviously not the expert and I'm going to come across a ton of poetry, I'm sure, that will just blow me out of the water. So I want to do some youth outreach, some community outreach, culminating in some poetry cafes or even poetry slam events, and basically just form a bit of a community of writers and have it open to any youth that's interested in poetry. You don't have to have any background in it at all. Everybody has to start somewhere. So that's basically my plan. And I know that they have a couple of readings scheduled for me or in the works, I suppose. So I'm excited to see what this looks like. I've got 2 years to make something out of it.
Would you be able to read some poetry?
Oh, yeah, of course. All right. So this one is called Nan's Pasta Recipe. I read an excellent poem in a terrible book about a woman's Amazon cart as she begins to wither away with cancer. I think of your star sign and the 26th of June, how you didn't get to prepare, or maybe you did, when your Google searches list chronic pain among trucks for your grandson and 100 shades of Skechers. I have kept myself busy to avoid your leaving. People tell me how sorry they are that I have to live without you, when they've done it for all of their years. I say, yeah, thank you, and change the topic. Tonight, I have curled up on my couch in the emptiness of this quiet house, look at tattoos of elephants, plan where I'll put your handwriting as it is engraved below my skin, where I've been storing my grief and where you kept your secrets. The pantry light is on, 5 days short of my 21st birthday. You wanted to go to Vegas, and we settled on somewhere in the United Kingdom. That Ireland trip was only a few years away. I stir the macaroni, holding back a sob, or maybe just a stomach ache that I haven't managed to cure. Mom and I FaceTime every night. We categorize our morning into wimpy days, as if our heartache was prescribed by a mood swing or the agonies of womanhood, and not the shadow of your essence that we keep hoping to see peeking around sullen corners. I lift the tomato sauce out of the fridge. People tell me I make pasta weird, but they haven't heard the clink of a scoop against your vintage cookware, the bubble of 8 minutes worth of nourishment in your sunflower kitchen. I just put up a Van Gogh, and I see your approval in the reflection of my face. In the department store frame, I see your nose and laugh in the fog of my glasses as muscle memory takes over in my state of hysteria. Put my dinner into the oven until the top is golden, serve in a giant bowl, and think to myself, this is not the same as Nan's.
Was that autobiographical at all?
Yeah, unfortunately, my Nan passed away in November, and we were very close. She was probably one of my best friends in my life, and she had a huge hand in raising my younger brother and I. So dealing with the grief has been an interesting process. I know that I'm very lucky at 21 to only have lost one grandparent, but it was definitely a big one for me. And so I think that it comes and goes in waves, and I can't necessarily predict what my grief is going to look like on any given day. We're definitely a family of compartmentalizers, so I tend to just keep myself busy. But as you can tell in that poem, you know, there are lots of things that remind me of my Nan. I mean, I'm wearing her sweatshirt as we do this interview and everything, so I try to summon her spirit and her essence in everything that I do. And even though I make pasta weird, it's what my Nan would have done, so I hope that she would have been proud of how my weird macaroni and cheese turned out, and you know, also the last 2 months and have been dealing with her loss.
If you were talking directly to a young person right now in the Nanaimo who's interested in poetry, what would you say to them?
I think I would say that your feelings and the words that you have floating around your head are valid, and more people are going to be experiencing them than you could ever imagine. So write everything down and don't be afraid of your own words. Never let people tell you that you need to be quiet or that your poetry isn't good enough, because it is good enough and everybody starts somewhere. So you need to just keep writing and keep on trucking, and maybe you'll get somewhere with it. Maybe it'll just be a phase for you, but it's never a waste of time and it's never wasted words.
That was Paige Pierce, talking about her role as the Nanaimo's Youth Poet Laureate. This is Mick Sweetman.
After cracking down on homeless encampments for weeks, the Edmonton City Council called a special meeting to declare a housing and houselessness emergency in the city. This comes after record-breaking cold temperatures swept across Alberta and following the closure of lots of encampments by city officials and police shortly before the cold snap. According to Mayor Amarjita Sohi, there is an estimated 3,000 individuals experiencing houselessness in Edmonton, an historic high. Here's Ryan Hunt in Edmonton, Alberta.
On Monday, January 15th, Edmonton City Council called a special meeting to announce a housing and houselessness emergency in the city after record-breaking cold temperatures swept the city and outreach centers were overwhelmed. Mayor Amarjit Sohi explained why the emergency was declared.
There are more Edmontonians becoming houseless than there are unhoused Edmontonians finding housing. People are staying unhoused for longer, and their needs are becoming more and more complex. Service providers are being forced into unsustainable expansion to keep up with demand. People are dying. Declaring an emergency will signal to Edmontonians that council understands the magnitude of this problem. This is a call to action.
Mayor Sohi explained how the city system has been under pressure as of late.
The demand for housing is considerably exceeding our current capacity. The system is in stress. Recently, houseless numbers in our city hit historic high of 3,170 people. The Edmonton Food Bank use is at record high, more than double compared to the highest of the pandemic peak in 2020. Between 2019 and 2022, the number of people seeking housing services within Edmonton has increased by 68%, while the number of people being housed has only increased by 7%. That is a significant and troubling gap.
The situation will evolve over the coming days. I'm Ryan Hunt.
I'm Anastasia Avakumova in beautiful British Columbia, and you are tuned to Viewpoints.
And to Montreal, where Quebec's Housing Tribunal published its rent increase guidelines on Tuesday. Most units will see a baseline 4% increase, reaching a high the province hasn't seen in over 30 years. Tenants groups say this couldn't come at a worse time. Quebec is seeing a big bump in homelessness. Evictions are up by 130%. And Bill 31, proposed by Quebec's Coalition Avenir Québec government, threatens to remove tenants' right to transfer their lease, which is often used to keep rents low. To discuss the state of the housing crisis in 2024, here's an excerpt from Jules Bugel's conversation with Cédric Dussault, spokesperson for the Regroupement des Comités de Logement et Associations de Locataires du Québec, which advocates for tenants' rights in the province.
I'm wondering if you could just set the scene. We've been hearing a lot over the past year and years about the housing crisis in Quebec, rising rents, rising evictions. What are you guys seeing as we enter a new year of housing in Quebec?
Well, 2023 has been a really tough year. It seems that we're seeing that every year, but it's getting worse and worse every year. So last year, what we saw is a steep increase in the numbers of evictions. It has increased 132% throughout the province. So that's more than double the numbers that we had in 2020. Of course, the rents are still soaring to levels that are unsustainable for a vast majority of tenants. So unfortunately, if that's probably what we're gonna see in 2024, because just the early reports that we have from various local organizations is that this year there has been, again, a lot of eviction notice and a lot of already, even though it's just beginning, but already some tenants have received their rent increase notice, and already it's getting problematic because a lot of landlords try to impose a very steep rent increase. So 2024 is not announcing to be different from 2023. And especially that this year, the Bill 31 has not been adopted last year, so it may be adopted in the following weeks. So if it is adopted, it's going to be even more problematic for tenants.
That's it for us this week at Viewpoints. If you wish to get in touch with us, our email is radio@frequencynews.ca. That's radio@frequencynews.ca. Thanks to our journalists this week, Mick Sweetman, Ryan Hunt, Brenda Little, Jules Bugiel, Erica Butler. Our national editors are Victoria Fenner and Maureen McEwen. Viewpoints is brought to you by the Community Radio Fund of Canada and your local community radio station. I'm your host and producer, Boris Chassaigne. Thanks for being with us this week, and until the next, ciao.